Where's Waldo? He's probably hanging out with Newsom. By the way, this is the news according to me. Yeah, the band had a little bit of a touchy trigger finger there, I think. They cut in on me a little too soon. I didn't check the rounds before I started shooting the gun. Boy, this case with Alec Baldwin, maybe I'll talk about that a little bit later. I probably won't, but I might. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll talk about it right now. Right after I refer to what I like to call the first segment of the show, most important segment, and why everybody tunes in. It's what's in my cup. Sweet tea. Homemade sweet tea. Made it myself yesterday. It's the best. The best there is. It doesn't get any better than that. It's good stuff. So the apparent Alec Baldwin thing is really it's really bizarre. This should be a cut and dried issue. Now, I don't know if you remember back when there's a really weird case. And I've tried to explain this to some people. I don't think many, for those of you who have been around more than 50 years, you probably remember this. So there's probably only about three of you out there that have been or that old, because that's just me and three other people on the planet that are that old. The this interesting thing that happened, Aaron Lee, I don't know if you remember this happening or not. On the film set of a film called The Crow, it's a very dark movie. I never seen it. I never watched it. It's just not my kind of movie. Sorry. And I, when I was younger, much younger than today, I was a Bruce Lee fan. And I was really into martial arts as a kid and always wanted to take karate lessons. And finally, about the time I was a high school kid, I was probably 16 years old. I was just getting ready to graduate. I graduated at the age of 17. I started my senior year at 16. I was a young little kid. I was the runt of the bunch. I started taking Taekwondo lessons. And it really suited me. It was just that was the sport that fit my physique. I was in wrestling in high school for freshman and sophomore year. I had to quit my sophomore year because I actually started working at a place. I couldn't even drive then. My freshman and sophomore year, I was in wrestling. By my junior year, I could not be in wrestling because I had a job, I had a part-time job. Still couldn't drive because I started my freshman year at 15. Eventually, I actually had a car before I could drive. I actually bought a car before I could even drive. And then I had a job, so I had to, because, you know, I had to get a job to pay off the car. Because I stupidly borrowed money for that car. It was a good car, good vehicle. It was a Blazer, actually, Chevy Blazer. 1971 Chevy Blazer. Convertible, had a soft top on it. That was a cool vehicle, let me tell you. It was a good vehicle. It was a good truck. Before I had that paid off, I traded it for another car. I still had a loan, still had a job, paying it off, doing fine. But that started my life of debt enslaved work. I had a choice. There was a crossroads there. I could have bought a car for $300 and fixed it up. Probably had it running well enough by the time I got into being able to drive. Could have had it all fixed up and just driven that back and forth to school for $300. And I could have stayed in wrestling. Could have participated more in high school. But no, I had to work. And it wasn't bad for me. Trust me, that was not a bad experience for me at all. Happy to have the job, happy to work. I'm really going off on the bunny trails here. This is a bunny trail on a bunny trail down a rabbit hole. And I'm not even sure it's a rabbit hole. It could just be a a sinkhole. This movie with Russell Crowe, not Russell Crowe, The Crow, called The Crow, didn't have Russell in it. Russell wasn't in the movie, by the way. I think it was a movie about him. So this movie was called The Crow, and Aaron Lee. I think it was Aaron Lee. It was Bruce Lee's son. He only had one son, one boy, one child. And he got into acting and movie stuff. He kind of started off a little bit into the martial arts world, but there was a pretty big shadow cast by his father that he had to live up to. I think he just was more interested in being an actor and making it in the acting world than he was necessarily being a martial artist. Because, of course, they expected him to be, you know, Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee was, by this point, he'd been dead for so long that he'd become just kind of like Chuck Norris. You know, he's invincible. Truth be told, Chuck is so old now that don't get me wrong, he's not going to mess around. He's not going to brawl with you. I've noticed that about older folks that are in martial arts. They have a lot of patience. They don't want to get into a fight. They will wait forever. They'll let it get to that point where really the only other option is just to rip your head off. And that's where they go. It's kind of like that old dog that sits in the corner that, as long as you don't bother him, everything's fine. But if you start poking him, he starts getting upset. He'll put up with quite a bit, but at some point, he knows how to take control of the situation, and he's going to do it. He's going to put an end to this and go back and lay back down in the corner and nap, you know, get his nap time in. I'm getting there. So this was the interesting part of this movie. In The Crow, Aaron has to do this thing where he's running at a, I think he plays like this super villain hero type person. I don't even know what the premise of the movie is, but I know that in this one scene, he's running towards someone shooting at him. And of course, in the film, they're using a gun that has a blank supposedly in it. Now, my understanding was that the cartridge came apart and shot shards out through it, and it pierced his heart or got him somehow, so it actually killed him. He died in the scene. There wasn't much of an investigation. They determined, you know, the issue was faulty system. It wasn't a live round, the way I understand it. Circumstances were a little bit sharded in secrecy. No, there wasn't a huge, big investigation in the public. I don't know those ever made really public. Maybe I'll just look it up here and see. I'll just see if I can find anything on it while we're talking. I'll have my crew get on that. I'll have my producer here. I'll have him look at that. See what happens here. Let's see if it's Aaron Lee. Yeah, I don't think it was. Yeah, it must have been Jason Lee. Maybe it was Jason Lee. Brandon Lee. Brandon Lee. There it is. Not Aaron. Brandon. The tragic death of Brandon Lee. Bruce Lee's son, Brandon, was shot while filming The Crow in 1994. The tragedy spawned endless talk on Hollywood curses and dark family shadows. But Brandon Lee's death... let's see here. Of course, I go to that section now. It's at a young age, solidified him as an almost mythic figure. And after Brandon decided to pursue his own, he's talking about Bruce Lee. They're talking about, while the elder Lee was renowned for his ballistic style, balletic style, and acting abilities, his death at a young age solidified him as an almost mythic figure. And after Brandon decided to pursue his own acting career, his father's legacy was one he could never shake. Not only did it put Brandon inherently in competition with his father, whom he idolized, but it also complicated the mourning process. So that's kind of one of the reasons I think he stayed away from the martial arts part of the things. I wish I could find the actual, according to Bradley, the recollections of Brandon. Romanticized rising stars, fashion, blah, 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 blah. It's not really saying here what the investigation ended up showing. The gun he used to shoot Brent Lee during filming was supposed to be filled with blanks, but a real bullet was inadvertently fired from the revolver. What in the world are real live rounds doing on a movie set? Striking Lee in the spine. The actor was rushed to the hospital and underwent surgery, but he succumbed to the injury March 1st, 1983, at the age of 28. This is what's weird about this. And this is what the almost a freaky thing about this whole thing. In a movie that Bruce Lee was filming called Game of Death, in the middle of filming, it had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in it. It had a couple other, had many, many. It even had Chuck Norris in it. It had many movie stars, karate guys. Danny Insano had a bunch of guys in there that were, at the time, very famous in terms of acting as well as competition. They were competition guys that everybody knew. Much like Enter the Dragon, it was a similar kind of thing. And this is going way back here, because these movies were made a long time ago. So the interesting thing here is that in the movie, Bruce Lee died during the filming of this movie. Now, he died because of what was apparently a drug interaction. He was, it's believed that he was probably taking someone else's pain medication. He had swelling of the brain. So there were some weird things going on with the death. It was kind of shrouded in mystery as well. But what it amounted to was he ended up dying. He wasn't in his own home. It was in someone else's home. He had taken some medicine, and apparently he'd been suffering from an injury. He had been injured. He injured his back at one point. He was on some pain medication. He was constantly in pain. His doctor was telling him he could eat cannabis. This was back in, of course, Hollywood in the 70s, 60s, whatever it was. And he was eating cannabis to help kind of with the pain, kind of pre cannabis oil type stuff to deal with some of the pain. Well, in the process, there was some kind of interactions contraindicated some issues there with some drugs, apparently. And that's what caused his death. I think it was a heart issue plus a brain swelling issue. Something was going on there. Actual cause of death, that's still a little bit questionable. But so anyway, he died in the middle of making Game of Death. Now, in the process of that happening, they had to somehow make his, because they had all this footage filmed of him that they wanted to get out in a movie. Everybody was anxious to see it. It had him fighting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Danny Insano and all these guys that were, this whole movie thing. And so they had to, in order to use this footage, they had to make up the rest of it. They only had about half the movie filmed. Maybe not even that much of it. And it really wasn't until the very end, where he works his way up this pagoda, that the actual footage of Bruce is being used. They had a stand-in actor for most of the rest of it. And of course, they had to come up with this reason for changing his face. Why his face was changed. Well, what in the process of he was a movie star guy, and somebody was after him, trying to kill him. And in the process, they while he was filming this movie, he was jumping up and doing this kick, and someone was supposed to shoot at him, and he was supposed to, you know, come down on top of them and kill them. Well, in the process, someone put a bullet in the gun and shot him in the face, which, you know, now the goal was to pretend like he had died. He was in really bad shape, and of course they faked his death, even had a funeral for him. This is in the movie. And of course they actually had video of Bruce's actual viewing, his memorial, laying in a casket, and the people that were crying and upset about it. It was actual footage from his memorial, from his wake. Then they went on with the movie after this guy recovered. He had to go undercover, so to speak. While they thought he was dead, they wouldn't suspect him coming after them. So that was the process. Well, then he finally finds the kingpin, lives at the top of this pagoda, and he has to go after this guy. And so that's what happens. So they use this bullet thing in the movie set to complete that movie. Ironically, that's the way Brandon died. A live round in the gun. Now, as far as we know, Brandon's not still alive and coming after anybody. However, it is ironic. It's the definition of irony. Now, we have the situation with Alec Baldwin. The armorer was not on the set at the time because there was no call for any firearms to be used. In fact, they were not filming at the time. Now, what's weird about this is that nobody was even running a cell phone. I kind of wonder about that. Somebody always is. Why was there a gun on the set? Why did Alec have it? And why was he shooting it? And why did no one check it for live rounds after it had been taken out over lunch break and used for plinking? Now, you have to understand, if you've ever been on a movie set, it is very loose. They typically do not get up very early in the morning unless they're looking for light, a certain kind of light. Usually the light they're looking for is the evening light. They don't get up. You can get the same light in the morning, by the way. As the sun is coming up, you get that golden hour in the morning, first hour of the sunrise, or the last hour before the sunset. That's the golden hour for the lighting, because you get the best film stops, you get the f-stops, you get the best coloration, shadows, all those kinds of things. Best motion blur. And that's what they do. They use that time to get the best natural light. And they don't do that as much as they used to, because now they have better lighting situations. They can do a lot more fake lighting, but it still takes a lot more effort. So you have to wonder. Now, remember, what I'm saying is that there are people on set that get up early, but most of the actors, they're sleeping in because they're too important to get up early. Alec gets up when he wants to. Things don't start until he was an assistant producer, executive producer, one of the producers for the show, for this movie. He was involved in it. And what that basically means, he was financially involved. And he was which gives you some ability to hire and fire people. So when we find out this issue of people walking off of the set because of safety concerns, Alec is directly involved in that. He could change. He's in a position to change. He's not just some actor who shows up and he's hired by somebody and he's just a lackey. He's directly involved in some of these decisions being made, or can be. Maybe he wasn't, you know, engaging in what was going on. So this is the interesting and crazy part of this whole thing is that what was going on? Was he just clowning around? Was he mad at somebody and was kind of acting out like he sometimes does, throwing a little tizzy fit, and somebody said something he didn't like, so he pulled the gun out and, you know, used it and didn't realize it was, you know, kind of as a joke or to put somebody in their place. Who knows what this guy did? Because it's been very shrouded in who knows what, and now it's become a criminal investigation. Of course, everybody's tight-lipped about it, and nobody wants to talk about it. Somebody is going to talk about it. I guarantee you somebody's going to end up coming out with this thing because they can't live with it. They know what happened, and they can't live with what's going to happen. And they're going to tell a police officer, and there's going to be an informant. There's more going on. Now, speaking of police officers, I was actually livid yesterday when I started hearing some of these reports about what was going on with James O'Keefe. This is the kind of thing that I have to really watch my tongue here, which is not easy because it's in my mouth and I can't really see down in there from where I am, unless I use a mirror. There's no mirror here in front of me. My tongue's not long enough to, I can see it there. I can watch my tongue. It's difficult for me, very uncomfortable for me, to hear what happened to James O'Keefe, as well as other ordinary citizens, but especially a person who is in the press, who literally does do the job of the press. He's, of course, now the people in the legacy media, they think this guy's a criminal. He's a convicted felon. Blah, 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 blah. Of course, he got convicted of a felony, I think, he got arrested, I think. I'm not sure if he ever got convicted because he was doing his job. Somebody didn't like it, and they went after him. He got accused of doing things that were supposedly breaking the law that 60 Minutes was made famous for doing. 60 Minutes is 60 Minutes because of what they used to do with undercover investigations, hidden cameras, all the stuff that they used to do. A lot of news organizations have become synonymous with that. So this whole thing with Ashley Biden's diary, or is it? We're being told that it's not hers, but she lost her diary. Now, here's one synopsis. Here's one theory in what could have happened here. Ashley may have had it. It may have been stolen, or it may have been left someplace, and somebody picked it up and didn't give it back to her. And so it is missing, and they know it's missing. However, it is also possible that someone else decided, they found out that it was missing, so they went out and made up a diary. They made up all this stuff. They don't have the actual diary. They just concocted all this stuff and tried to sell it to Specs O'Keefe, I want to call him, James O'Keefe. Now, let's go down the conspiratorial rabbit hole for a second. There is a possibility that James was set up. And follow me on this, because this is exactly the SOP of the FBI. This is the way they operate. It is their modus operandi. I would not put it past the FBI to have concocted a plan, whether or not Ashley ever had a diary or not, or journal, or whatever you want to call it. She may not have even had one. There may never have been a diary. This could have been something the FBI came up with. Somebody came up with this plan. May not have even been the FBI, but I guarantee you probably somebody within the FBI wanted to use this whole situation. And they came up with somebody, because it was a lawyer that approached the person who had the diary. Had their lawyer contact Veritas in the process of trying to sell them on the idea that this was her diary. They tried to corroborate the diary to find out if it really was her diary or not. They could not find any corroborating evidence. They couldn't verify it was hers. They decided not to publish the story, and they were going to return it. And they even tried to give it to law enforcement. I can't remember the whole story. I think he explains some of that in this interview. I'm going to play this interview with Sean Hannity. It was last night. He was interviewed Greg Jarrett, I think so. He just excoriates the FBI. Jarrett does. But this is the process that they would do. They would come up with this situation where they could entrap or somehow corner the Veritas organization. Sorry, I was getting a text that I thought I had to answer here. I thought it was going to be something pertinent to the show, but it wasn't. This situation where he's, it would be just like the FBI to do something like this. This is exactly what they did with the dossier. They had this dossier that they could then use as evidence to further their case, give them probable cause, and do all kinds of spying and launch an investigation. Of course, once they launch an investigation, that gives them all kinds of cover to not answer any questions. It goes through this whole thing of gathering information and investigating people, spying on people, getting FISA warrants, those kinds of things. Now, why the Federal Bureau of Investigations is involved in an issue that is a state law It's just weird. This thing has slimy fingerprints all over it. And anymore, when the FBI is involved, I pretty much have to, look a little bit through squinted eyes, much like Sleepy Joe. Because I don't trust them anymore. And I'm hearing that from a lot of people right now. Dan Bongino, Sean Hannity, I really hit it on target yesterday for once. Everything I said pretty much about the FBI, this whole investigation, all this other stuff that was going on, even the stuff about the coronavirus. Was all being put. It was like they used my show for their show prep, and I know they didn't do that. But I was right on target with everything that was going on in terms of where everybody else went with it, which is not necessarily maybe not a good thing. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm seeing it properly. Maybe I'm just falling into the rabbit hole with everybody else. So this whole thing that now all of a sudden they have this probable cause, supposedly somebody had to sign off on it. And in fact, Merrick Garland, the attorney general, would have to have signed off on this warrant for them to go after O'Keefe. That is a law. He has to be involved in the process whenever they go after a journalist. That is part of the regulations within their department. So he knew about it. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he ordered it, knowing this guy. O'Keefe, of course, now he had his cell phones taken. He had two cell phones taken. They were in his house for about 2 hours, which is long enough for them to download pretty much anything they want to off of computers. They can also install software on computers. They can put bugging devices in the home. They can do all kinds of things in 2 hours. 2 hours is a long time. O'Keefe was outside in handcuffs, in his briefs. Now, when I hear him talk about the way they treated him, it literally makes my blood boil. It makes me want to say things about the FBI that I'm not going to say. Let's listen to this for a moment. and see what you think, because I think that you're going to be as equally upset about this as I am. Here's how they treated him.
On Saturday morning, I acknowledge that, but I woke up to a pre-dawn raid banging on my door. I went to the door to answer the door, and there were 10 FBI agents with a battering ram, white blinding lights. They turned me around, handcuffed me, and threw me against the hallway. I was partially clothed in front of my neighbors. They confiscated my phone. They raided my apartment. On my phone were many of my reporter's notes, a lot of my sources unrelated to this story, and a lot of confidential donor information to our news organization, Sean. So I've heard the phrase, the process is the punishment. I didn't really understand what that meant until this weekend. And Sean, I wouldn't wish this on any journalist.
Let me go.
So, again, they come into the home pre-dawn hours. Why didn't they just knock on the door? Why didn't they just knock on the door and say, Mr. O'Keefe, we're conducting an investigation. Would you like to answer a few questions? If he says no, they could say, well, we have a warrant. And we're coming in. What is the... This is all fear and intimidation and bullying. All the things that the left says they stand against. This is what they do. And so it is one of those defining moments, in my opinion, in this, especially while all this stuff going on right now with the dossier. And there, you know, now it's coming out. We're finding out that the whole Russia thing was a hoax. And of course, the mainstream media is not saying anything about it. They're arresting people at the very... Now, I think this is all going to be peripheral arrests. I don't know if... I think Andy McCabe, I believe, has retired from the FBI. Peter Strzok, I believe, is still working for the FBI. His partner, the married woman he was having an affair with, I think is also still working for the FBI. They're in different positions now, different departments. But I think Andy McCabe had to retire, but however, he got full benefits. And there were people who won Pulitzer Prizes, or maybe it was Nobel Prizes. Maybe it was Nobel Peace Prizes, whatever they got, for doing the reporting on this whole story. And come to find out, it was all a concocted hoax that they all knew about. Now, remember Adam Schiff, every day he was coming out there saying, oh, the evidence is in plain sight. Yeah, he colluded. He colluded with the Russians. And of course, the Mueller report came out and it was all, he was a bumbling idiot. At least he played one on TV. And that's what happened there. And then, of course, nothing ever happened, but they continued to leave doubt in the public's eye or in the public's mind about whether or not he actually did do that with anything with Russia. Well, now we're finding out that no, this was all concocted, and it was all done with the express purpose of destroying Trump. Paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, just like we were told. Jim Jordan every day talked about this, talked about the whole thing every day, had it in spades, nailed it down, had the story exactly the way it had happened. And everybody thought he was nuts. Devin Nunes knew what was going on as well, was trying to say, you know, what was happening here. It was all part of a soft coup to try to get rid of Trump. First of all, to try to keep him from getting elected. Once he got elected, they could especially use it as it was such a shock that he got elected. He had to have had help from the Russians. He couldn't have done this on his own. Hillary was a shoo-in. She was supposed to win. It was going to be a landslide. And then all of a sudden it wasn't. And their heads exploded. And they refused to believe any kind of truth, any kind of evidence. They had convinced themselves that this was a monster and they had to do anything they could. Anything that they could do to get rid of Trump was justifiable because the end justifies the means. And this is where they really, that whole principle for them really shined. Sure enough, they went after him. And for 4 years, that's all we heard. The election was phony. He's an illegitimate president. We have to impeach him twice. We're still trying to impeach him again, so he can't run again. And now we find out that this was all. And it, thank goodness that the former AG, I can't even remember his name. Put in Durham as an independent counsel. Now, it has yet to be seen whether or not anyone of any great consequence is going to be arrested in any of this or indicted. Durham seems to be very thorough. He seems to be doing a very good job, much better than Mueller ever did. But my guess is he will not be allowed to get too close to things, or that he will not go there simply because he's, I don't know. I don't know if he's been compromised or not. This was a big part of Steven Crowder's show yesterday. He was talking about just being consistent and fair and having equal application of the law. This is the problem I have with YouTube. YouTube will allow, there is video footage that Steven Crowder showed on his show on YouTube. His show was taken down because of certain video footage he had. Another show was labeled as mature content. That what that does is it eliminates about 30% of your audience. People can't watch your show unless they're signed in, all kinds of other things. So that changes everything. The same exact footage was on MSNBC, about 20 other different news organizations had played the exact same footage. In fact, they played more graphic versions of those footage of the footage. Nothing was done to them. They had no restrictions on their videos at all. This is selective enforcement of policy. And this is what is probably the most aggravating thing. The same thing applies to the law. When the FBI doesn't go after one person, but they go after another person because they're doing the same exact thing, because it's selective. Sometimes it's because they have a motive, and that motive is, well, they have dirt on somebody they can use. If they can't use you, they'll go ahead and apply make an example out of you, so that they can then use that leverage of an example on the person they're trying to manipulate or control, someone of higher power. They can use then to get their budget that they want, or whatever it is they're doing. Some of these alphabet soup organizations have become an entity all of their own, and they're basically designed just to protect themselves. And it is extremely, sinister in the way that they're fleshing out their processes. And I think James O'Keefe is now a part of that. One of the things he said there was, they got his phone, which not only has information about this particular incident, has all of his notes and other things he's got on his phone that they can get to. I don't know how they're going to unlock it. Hopefully, he has a way of unlocking. The FBI now has been known to be able to unlock phones now. Well, they can certainly do it. I'm sure they can do it. Or one of the other alphabet soup organizations are going to help them with that. It is an atrocity. This is an absolute abuse of power, in my opinion. And it's enough to get my... I'm just livid. It aggravates me when I hear that they bust into a place, throw up somebody up against the wall, haul them outside in their underwear in handcuffs for the neighbors to see, walk off with someone's personal property, all under the guise of a whacked up, phony warrant. It's just very, very aggravating, in my opinion. Very disgusting. and I would like to see a lot of people in the country just rise up and just left and right. This whether you like it or not, this is like he said. One of the things that James said was, if they can do this, they can do this to anybody. They can do this to me. They can do it to any journalist. Journalists all over the place should be rising up. The problem is they won't because they don't like him. They think he's a bad guy because he doesn't fit their political agenda. Well, at some point, they're not going to like your political agenda. I mean, this is the kind of thing that, this is the whole thing that happened, well, when they came for the Jews. I didn't care because they weren't coming after me. Then when they came for, you know, so-and-so, I didn't care because they weren't coming after me. Then when they came for me, there was no one else left to care. So it's just stupid for people to go down this road of, as long as the bad guy is going after my enemy, you know, like the enemy of my enemy is my friend, kind of thing. And it's just stupid. And it's so here we are, folks. This is where we're at. We have a situation where the FBI, in my opinion, is now weaponized. And I don't know what we do about that. I have no idea how we're going to stop that. If the next person running for president does not have a plan for how they're going to rein in these organizations and take control of them, because in my opinion they've become an entity of themselves, they've become a government of in and of themselves. Think about this. I was going to talk about this yesterday, and I never got around to it, but I wanted to hit on it today just because my subject basically is revolving around the FBI and law enforcement. This is, let's talk about the FBI and some of these other intelligence organizations. And we also have the NIA, which is supposed to, I guess that's supposed to, or is it the NIA? I think it's the NIA. Whatever Radcliffe was ahead of for a while and Grinnell was ahead of for a while. It's like this organization that is supposed to oversee all the other organizations. National Intelligence Director, whatever it is. And they're supposed to conglomerate and sift through all the information that all the other organizations are compiling. Let's see if we can find the number of intelligence agencies. Hopefully this is just in the U.S. Intelligence agencies. Let's go with this. See what it says. And now this has got every country there is. And I don't really want that. Let's see what we can find here. Israel has Mossad, Shin Bet, Amman, and Lahav. Let's see what we got here for the United States. They probably don't list them all. A lot of countries have a lot of them. Yeah, Poland's got a few. So we look at the USA. There's the United Kingdom. They got a whole bunch. Okay, so there's the... Of course, there's the Central Intelligence Agency. There's now the Director of National Intelligence, which is the DNI. That was what I was thinking of earlier. That's what Central Intelligence Agency, Defense Intelligence Agency, National Security Agency, NSA, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, NGA, National Reconnaissance Office, NRO, Army Intelligence, Marine Corps Intelligence, Navy Intelligence, Air Force Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance Enterprise, which is the U.S. Air Force, ISR. The Space Force Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance Enterprise, USSF, SR, ISR. The Department of Energy has an Office of Intelligence and Counterintelligence, the OICI. Then there's the United States Department of Homeland Security. They have two offices, Office of Intelligence and Analysis, INA, the Coast Guard Intelligence, CGI. Not going to be confused with CGI in a movie. Computer-generated. Anyway. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, the Office of National Security Intelligence, ONSI. Now, that I think that actually was the office that the $6 million man worked for. If you remember Steve Austin. Yeah, anyway. Bureau of Intelligence and Research, the INR, they work for the State Department. Then the Department of the Treasury has an Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence. So that's all of the organizations. It looks like there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. There are 17 different intelligence agencies. And all of them need to have some oversight, in my opinion. So, of course, now we have 18, really, if you include the Director of National Intelligence, the guy who, the agency that oversees all the agencies. Think about this for a moment. This is where I'm going with this. The President of the United States gets a briefing every morning, probably several times a day, but the big ones in the morning. What's been going on in the world? What's happening? What do I need to know? These organizations, these intelligence organizations, are run very, very tightly. And here's how it works. When there's a special secret, kind of top secret thing going on that the higher-ups don't want the little peons to know what's going on, they give them a task. Let's say you need to go after, you just issue this warrant. And the foot soldiers on the ground, they need to go in and they need to bust into this home, conduct an FBI raid of James O'Keefe. He has stolen material. And so they go after him. Of course, the foot soldiers are just doing their job. I'm the guy with the battering ram. Okay, he has no idea what the warrant even says. These guys, they're not all reading the warrant. Okay, they're just following orders, doing their thing. We're supposed to go in and get this guy, go in and confiscate certain material. And then there's somebody a little higher up that knows what the warrant says and executes the warrant. Probably the head guy at the raid. And he may not have even read it. He's just going by what his higher up briefed him on. Because there are many levels to this organization. So then, now, that might be part of something bigger that nobody else knows really what the piece that everybody sees, a little piece of the puzzle. Nobody knows where the puzzle goes, where that piece goes, or what it belongs to, or what's actually happening. The same thing's going on here with this whole thing. Is they keep everybody in the dark, and only the people at the top know exactly what the plan is. Now, these are the people who are putting together reports for the president and his staff. The president and his staff have to trust these individuals to do the right thing. James Comey was this pompous, arrogant, above-the-law individual who thought he was so high up in the ethics department, because that's what he taught, believe it or not. He was a stand-in teacher, I don't know what they call it, an adjunct teacher, whatever, for, I think it was Columbia University, teaching ethics, law ethics, or whatever it was. Now, think about that for a second. One of the things he did, now this is how this guy's mind works. One of the things he did in this whole investigation with Trump, right when Trump got into office, he had a meeting with Trump. I've talked about this before. This was a shakedown. I don't know how else you could look at this. How anybody can look at this and not talk about this as to call it what it is, because that's exactly what it was. James Comey got a one-on-one with the president. And in that one-on-one meeting with him, he showed him the dossier. He said, "This is the according to him." He said, "This is the kind of information that's out there. I just want you to know this is the kind of thing that people are pushing around." And he shows him this whole thing about the dossier with the P tape and all that stuff that was going on. I don't think he expected the reaction from Trump that he got, because Trump knew it wasn't true. So it's Trump, I think it was just kind of like, well, what are you talking about? I mean, somebody approached you with something like that, and you had nothing to do with it. It was just like, okay, well, what? So deal with that stuff. This was meant to be a shakedown, and it was meant to be, we're going to put this in front of him, because if this actually happened, which I believe Comey knew it didn't happen, or suspected it didn't, he was wanting to get a reaction from Trump. This was going to be his opportunity to say, if you step out of line, if you don't do what we want you to, we're going to make this public. This was the shakedown moment. They did the same thing. If you talk to the guy who invented, I cannot remember the name of it. I think it was, wasn't Amazon. What was it? Something else. One of the big tech guys ended up selling his company for millions of dollars. Hundreds of millions, probably a billion. The guy who did that was approached by the FBI to talk to Hillary Clinton. Him and Hillary were kind of acquaintances. They had a sting operation set up to go after Hillary, but they weren't going to do anything. She agreed to take money two different times to take bribes from foreigners. And this guy arranged the whole thing. He's on record having talked about this stuff. The FBI, after they got everything recorded, got everything on done, the FBI shut up about it. Nobody said anything. One of the guys took this guy aside and said, "We're simply going to use this. This is how this works. We're simply going to use this to control her. We can turn up the fire and let her know we have this information. She doesn't do what we want her to, because they thought she was going to be president. They thought she was going to win in 2016. They set her up. They had not set up Trump because they really didn't believe he was going to make it. They had an insurance policy, according to Mr. Strzok. And this was the insurance policy. So that's where we are. That's what's going on with these people. They think that they're doing the country a favor because they're manipulating these people behind the scenes or keeping them on track. Well, so we find out now that things are not as they seem. And how do you know that these people who are feeding intelligence information to our leaders, the president and the administration and people in Congress, how do we know that they're not making this crap up? Part of this, I appreciate the fact that there's this game going on. And I've talked about this before. Oh, wow, the Chinese have hypersonic missiles. Oh, no, that caught us off guard. We weren't aware of that. Now, to me, it all looks like an act. I think we were aware of it. Now maybe I'm just naive here. I don't know. Maybe they've got me bamboozled into thinking that we're much further ahead than we really are. While I would not be terribly shocked if we actually were behind and didn't know that they were doing this, I would not be terribly shocked. I really suspect that this is all part of a theater thing. This is all act. That we know full well that they had these missiles. And I know that we know probably how to take these things down. This was probably one of their top secret operations over there in China. Most covert thing that they were trying to do until they launched the missile, of course. And for us to come out and say, oh yeah, we knew all about it. We knew they were doing that. Don't worry. We have a way to combat it. We're showing our cards. I would hope that our intelligence agencies would have enough intelligence, actually wisdom, to deny knowing anything about it. Well, how do they know anything about it? Who's the rat that told them? That's what my first question would be. If I was a Chinese guy and I was like, this was our most top secret undercover operation we've ever done with regard to putting something like this together. How do they find out? Somebody had to have ratted on us, or they have some way of knowing. We got to dig into this and figure out how they figured it out. For us to just come out and say, oh, we don't know. That surprised us. We have no idea. Well, that leaves them with this, oh, see, we were able to pull one over on them. We're not even going to look and see if they've got any kind of spies over here, because obviously we did that and they didn't know about it. And I think we've one-upped them. We're ahead of them now. They don't have this kind of technology. I think we've got things that are far beyond that, personally. But that may just be the perception that they want us to believe. Remember Star Wars? President Reagan had one of the best poker faces on the planet. He started this whole thing about Star Wars. We're going to invest in Star Wars. We're going to have satellites in the sky that can blow the Soviets off the map. I mean, you're talking about parking missiles in geocentric orbit above Russia that can just basically pretty much fall out of the sky on top of them in a heartbeat. They're just like 100 miles away. Straight at them. Pretty tough to fight that off. Knowing that somebody's literally holding atomic weapons over your head. Well, Reagan convinced the Soviets that was happening, and they were basically going broke at that point. The Soviet Union was really having a hard time staying together. Now Russia was fine, but the Soviet Union was breaking apart, and financially it broke them. They couldn't keep it together. At that time, it was the biggest bluff on the planet that ever happened, and it was. We weren't doing anything with Star Wars. It was all a ruse. Well, for the most part. Now, the military is in space, don't get me wrong. We got all kinds of satellites up there that are military-based, and we're not going to find anything about them. Probably one of these 17 organizations I'm looking at right here have something to do with it. So who knows how much of this is an act? How much of it is feigning? How much of it is real? I have this suspicion that we probably have a lot more technology. I mean, all through the 50s and 60s, as I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, we were still doing the dive under your desk. If you see a flash off in the distance, jump behind a wall, get down. Stop, drop, and cover. We would have fallout shelter drills where we'd go to, there's a particular hallway that we would go to in the school. Everyone would sit down along the wall and put your head. They called it storm training, but we knew what it was. It wasn't just for a storm. It was also for national emergency. And then we knew what a national emergency was. We watched films about atomic war and how we could protect ourselves against it, supposedly. Because, you know, the bomb always dropped someplace, you know, 100 miles away, and then we were supposed to protect ourselves from that. I don't know why a bomb never fell on us. What do you do then? I guess it didn't matter. So all this stuff was done in the 60s. All of a sudden, getting into the 80s and 90s, kids don't do that anymore. There's not this fear of, well, of course, after the Soviet Union broke apart, but there's not this urgency, this Cold War feeling anymore. And yet all the weapons are still out there. In fact, China is building more of them every day. I believe that by 2030, they're supposed to have 1,000 nuclear warheads. But they're just a developing country. They have hypersonic missiles. They have the largest navy in the world. They're rapidly building their nuclear armament. But they're just developing. So we can excuse them when they make all these greenhouse gases that we have to pay taxes for. Or we will. Which gets me to the global tax issue. And that's a whole other issue. I'll be talking about that later. I've realized I've just gone over time here. It's over an hour. When I get to the point of an hour, I'm like, it's time to end that. So I just, I'm hoping that those of you who are listening, and I do appreciate you listening. If you've made it this far, then you must have no other life. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate you sharing and subscribing and passing this information on, and just hopefully it just have enlightened you to think a little deeper than the headline. Go a little further than just, well, if they're saying this, it must be true. Because most of what you see on the political scene is simply political theater. It is scripted, made for television, made for the soundbite. And if you can look at it and look a little beyond it, not conspiratorially, not this whole tinfoil hat thing, but just look at the obvious, things are not quite what they say they are attitude. Be a little bit skeptical about what they're telling you. Don't just swallow it hook, line, and sinker. And don't get caught up in the emotional narrative that they like to. Usually, in the midst of those emotional narratives, what you'll find is that they start to contradict themselves. They contradict truth. They contradict reality. It sounds good and it feels good when they say it, but it doesn't align with reality or what's actually happening. If you kind of keep things from that perspective, in that perspective, I think you will have a better understanding of critical thinking in this era, this time that we have. Now, having said all that, I will say no more, because I think it's like I said, we're basically out of time. I don't know what else to say. That's all I'm going to say. I wish I had some more answers. The only answer I have is that we pray that God is sovereign. He has the right to rule. He has the right to rule. Simply being sovereign means simply you have the right to rule. And when people say God is in control, He is in control of Himself, and He's in control of His kingdom. And I think that's important we remember that. He's not necessarily controlling people, because we have our own will. He won't step across that line. However, He is in control of His kingdom, and His kingdom shall rule and reign forever. In that we can have hope and trust. We can be a part of that kingdom. He's invited us. God bless everybody. Have a great day.